Good morning, everybody. Good morning. First time I'm speaking. I want to extend my own welcome to everyone, and particularly those who are here for the first time or haven't been here for a while. It's good to see you all. And we're going through the book of Exodus, and as Janelle was reading those verses, I was thinking, these aren't verses that often make up part of our daily devotional reading and that kind of thing. They're not things that we read about very often. What are we to do with all this? A few weeks ago, in our church here, I guess it was 2 weeks ago tomorrow, we had a meeting. Picture was taken after the meeting. And this meeting was, it was ahead of our 2017, 2018 out of the cold season. Kind of a refresher, an information session. A warm-up, if you like. And we heard from various speakers. So we heard from a representative from Dixon Hall, and they told us what that organization does in general and what they do to help us in this ministry. We heard from a social worker who talked about some of the difficulties, the challenges in serving people who are marginalized. And that was good, and it was interesting. And then things really got interesting because we had three police officers here. We had three representatives from the Toronto Police Services, and you could see them in the picture. And one was from the community relations section. One was from a unit in which an officer who's not in a regular uniform, it's kind of a toned down, less aggressive uniform, or they're paired with a registered nurse, and they go around in a van and help people. And he spoke. And then finally, the gentleman on the left spoke, and he was a member of the undercover intelligence unit. And he talked about things like overdoses, and we heard about things like how much people who are addicted to drugs take from the LCBO, steal from the LCBO. Who knew? We heard about fentanyl and bad batches of drugs and how they maintain relations with informants or rats, as he called them. Sending texts at Thanksgiving and so on. It was really interesting and hard. And he talked about drug busts in York region and all this kind of thing. And I was sitting where Pastor Abby is and thinking, this is not something we often hear about in church. And we don't often have uniformed police officers in church. And I was really liking it. I was loving it, actually. And my job that night, I was going to speak last. I spoke last. And my job, as it often is to inject a little of God into the conversation, inject a little theology, to be the spiritual presence in a way, or at least the visible and audible reminder of God and where God is in all this stuff. And when I got up to speak, I told the people gathered, I said, you know, normally when I get up to preach here on a Sunday morning, and I was at this spot, I said, normally when I get up to preach, I'm following the person who has just read the scripture. This is what I normally do. And I said, tonight, I'm following Toronto Police Services, who were talking about all the things that I just mentioned, and really dire things, and really bitter things. And hard things. And why did I think this was so good and fitting? And this is what I told them. If you were here, you're hearing this for the second time, but it bears repeating, surely. I told them that it reminded me that all our thoughts of God, that all our thinking about God that we hold in our head and our hearts, it doesn't just exist up in our head or in our hearts. And when we're talking about God, friends, we're not merely philosophizing. We're not merely theorizing. We're not merely theologizing. What we hold to be true of God is meant to be worked out in practical ways in the real world. And even and maybe most especially in the mess of life, which is what we were very focused on that night. So it was good. And I told them, I said, we believe that everyone is made in God's image. We believe everyone is made in God's image. We believe everyone is loved by God. And I told them a story that Jesus told that showed how anyone who gave a drink to the thirsty or food to the hungry or clothing to those who needed it or healed the sick or visited the imprisoned or welcomed the stranger, whoever was doing these, Jesus said, was doing these in some mysterious and wonderful and potentially frightening way to him. Because what we believe is meant to be worked out in what we do. And Janelle read a selection of passages from what's called the Covenant Code. And last week we came to the mountain, we came to Mount Sinai along with the Israelites, and we're still there this week. They're called laws or ordinances in chapter 21:1. And if you have your Bibles open, I'll be referring to passages and verses throughout. I'll have some of them on the screen, but not all of them. The words had been spoken in chapter 20. This is right before the Ten Commandments or the Ten Sayings or the Ten Words. Then God spoke all these words. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me, etc., etc. And it gets into the Ten Commandments in Exodus 20. The question that we're asking ourselves this morning, friends, and the question that I want us to sit with this morning, and as we go from here, and indeed make it one of the questions of our lives, really, is how then shall we live? How then shall we live as a people who have been delivered? And I say as a people who have been delivered because this must always be our first consideration. We're talking about doing, and so we think about verbs. And look at the verbs in this verse. God says, I am. God says, I brought. I am the Lord your God. I brought you out of Egypt. I delivered you. We're talking about what God has done. And this is the thing about this code, this covenant code, which goes from the end of chapter 20 where Janelle started, and it goes right to the end of 23. This is what we call the covenant code. This is what we're talking about. There were other ancient Near East law codes, and the most famous is called the Hammurabi Code. The Hammurabi Code was a Babylonian code of law. It was written on this stela. This is in the Louvre in Paris. You can go see that. 17th century BC. It was named after a Babylonian king. You heard of that one? Yeah, good. It's not just ancient history. But the thing is, other codes were just that, codes. Like our criminal code. It's a list of laws. It was a list of laws, a list of do this, don't do that. And those of you who know me know that I'm not such a big fan of such things. I've been known to loiter under a no loitering sign, for example, just for fun. The Israelites are not told to follow these codes. The Israelites are not told to follow these laws simply because God said so. The Israelites are told to follow these codes based on what they had seen. And this is where we start. Chapter 20, verse 22 goes like this. You have seen for yourself that I spoke with you from heaven. You have seen for yourself that I spoke with you from heaven. The Israelites had seen for themselves how God had delivered them from oppression in Egypt. This is what we've been on these 10 weeks. We're going through Exodus in 12 weeks. This is what we're in the middle of. We're on the 10th week. The Israelites had seen what God had done. John puts it like this in his letter. We declare to you what was from the beginning, what we have heard. This is from 1 John. What we have seen with our own eyes, what we have looked at and touched with our hands concerning the word of life. We're talking about what we have seen. And following Christ is meant to be worked out in ways that are seen. And all of this is based on God and the fact that God is a God who delivers. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt. We were very much on this last week on the basis of what all this law is. The basis is I am the Lord your God who's delivered you. Therefore, be faithful to this God. Therefore, keep your eyes on this God. Therefore, seek this God and his kingdom first, as somebody would say later on. first. Make this God the foundation of your life. This is our invitation. You shall, and this is verse, chapter 20, verse 23 is how it starts. You shall not make gods of silver alongside me, nor shall you make for yourselves gods of gold. The danger, in other words, the snare that is being laid out here, what is known as the snare in these verses, is not that Israel will break the laws. It's not so much that Israel will act contrary to the laws and act in a contrary way to God's will, which is to bring life and blessing. But the danger is that they will seek other gods. So right from the beginning, we're hearing that holding fast to God is the primary thing. Holding fast to God is our primary thing. It's our foundational thing. But even this isn't all dependent on us. It's dependent on God's faithfulness to us, that God has been faithful to us, that God has established a relationship with us, and that God has delivered us. And this is where we must always start. One writer puts it like this. God does not expect loyalty from Israel apart from declaring the divine loyalty to Israel. In fact, it is only from within the context of divine faithfulness that human faithfulness is possible. It's not something we do on our own. Same quote. Those who are called to obedience know that the God who so speaks is a God who is for them. And I always talk about that line from the Psalm that I love so much. This I know, that God is for me, that God is for us and for their best interests, not standing over them as a threat. Not standing over them as a threat. The God who gives the law is the God who makes promises. It's good. So this is good news, but what does it all have to do with baseball? I'm going to answer that question. So it was game five of the NLDS, I guess, the Cubs and the Nationals. And the Nationals were down 9-8. Jose Lobaton was on first. There was a runner on first. Runners on first and second, two out. And the pitch comes in. The Cubs catcher, Wilson Contreras, gloves the fastball. Lobaton had taken a lead from first, as runners do. And Contreras snapped a throw to first. Lobaton technically beat the throw. He beat the throw. But the Cubs called for a replay because there's a replay rule now. And, the replay showed that Lobaton's slide, he slid feet first back into first. His slide had kind of, the momentum sort of made his leg go over the bag, his foot lifted off the bag for a split second and he was out and the inning was over and the Nationals lost the game and indeed the series. This leads to a lot of discussion among sports fans about the spirit of the rule. Have you heard this? We talk about the spirit of the rule. What's the spirit of the rule? And I must say, the spirit of the replay rule was not to call somebody out on a play that in 100 years of baseball, he's safe on. He beat the throw. Anyway, there's always next year for the Nationals, and I'm not invested in any way, so. But I'm talking about the spirit of the rule. And friends, we're going to spend the next little while looking at parts of this code that we don't often look at. And some of them are difficult. But I tell this story because I want us to be thinking about the spirit of the code. I want us to be thinking about what the spirit of this code is that we read in Exodus 21 to 23. What does it tell us about God? And what does it tell us about how God wants us to live? And this is what I want us to look at. It's been said that we take the Bible seriously. We don't always take it literally. And I agree with this. We don't always take the Bible literally. We don't say that Jesus, we don't believe Jesus was a lamb, for example. But we take it seriously and we take the whole thing. And literal readings of biblical text, friends, have led people to do some awful things. Literal readings of biblical text have led to the justification of some awful things. There are those who've said up until quite recently that because the Bible doesn't say you shall not have slaves, it was all right to have slaves. And the Bible gives us laws about them after all. Ergo, it must be all right. We must always look at the laws in the context in which they're placed. And in the context of the story in which they're placed, and this story is about God who delivered a people from oppression, God who delivered a people from slavery. It's interesting to note that the only time the mode of death is described when a capital penalty is prescribed here is for the ox who gores someone to death. Janelle read that verse. And as someone has said, there's no record of this actually happening. There's no record of people stoning an ox to death. And how difficult would it actually be to stone a deadly ox? A 2,000-pound ox. Right? Hard. What's the point of that? What is the point of that law? What's the spirit of the code? The spirit of the code is we value human life above property. We value human life above property. We value human life above money. The beginning of 20 talked about slaves, or the beginning of 21. In this society, indentured slaves were common. An indentured slave is a slave who is working to pay off a debt. An indentured slave is working to pay off a debt. The poor, in other words, who had no other choice. And the code says, if you have such a slave, let them go in the seventh year. Let them go. Deuteronomy 15 takes it further. This is Deuteronomy 15. And when you send a male slave out from you, a free person, you shall not send him out empty-handed. Provide liberally out of your flock, your threshing floor, and your wine press, thus giving him some of the bounty with which the Lord has blessed you. And this is good because I said these laws are not simply because I told you so. And none of us like that, right? Our parents lay this on us because I said so. But don't question your parents too much. I get in trouble. Why? Why should we do this? Remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt and the Lord your God redeemed you. For this reason, I lay this command on you. Remember, in other words, who I am. Remember who God is. And what God has done and what God is doing and will do. We're to value people over things. We're not to value people. We're not to see people as commodities. It means we don't support industries that reduce people to commodities. Pornography, prostitution. It's not because Christians are no fun or want to spoil everybody's fun, but because a gift like human sexuality from God, a gift from God like human sexuality is not to be reduced to treating people like commodities or objects. So people over money. And getting back to that ox, the owner of the goring ox will not be permitted to butcher and sell it. And that's spelled out in the code as well. And we say, why? Why would this be? Because we shouldn't be profiting from the suffering of others. The spirit of the code. We shouldn't be profiting from the suffering of others. When people are harmed, the code says, you shall give life for life, eye for eye. The famous eye for an eye principle, which became even more famous when Jesus mentioned it in the Sermon on the Mount. Eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. Burn for burn, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. And we may look at this and say, how barbaric. How barbaric. Are we to be gouging people's eyes out? Is this what the thing was? The principle, friends, was to make sure that the punishment did not exceed the crime on one hand. The principle was to make sure the punishment didn't exceed the crime, that it wasn't a life for an eye or a life for an insult, or a stabbing for an insult, or a killing for a theft, which surely must make people think, rethink this sort of thing, right? I'm not making this up. This is what goes on in our world. And we have to think about what a Christian response is to it. Because it's not supposed to be a life for stuff. That's hard. The other side of the life for a life principle was to make sure, an eye for an eye principle. The other side of this principle was to make sure that people of means, that people who had cash, couldn't just buy their way out of harming others. That they couldn't go around doing things and paying people off and continue to do them. It would almost be like today if there were somebody who was going around sexually assaulting people and sexually harassing people. And this would go on for a long period of time because they were paying people off and silencing them in various ways. And people were too scared to speak up because they had money. And after all, they were bringing in a lot of money for the industry. Right? This is what this law speaks to. And God says, this is not my way. And you don't have to make the Bible relevant. The Bible is relevant. This is not my way, says God. And speaking of how literally we're to take these things, look at the passage that follows the eye for an eye part. When a slave owner strikes the eye of a male or female slave, destroying it, the owner shall let the slave go. It doesn't say the owner shall lose his eye. So right after the eye for an eye thing, it says, oh, by the way, if it's a slave, you shall let the slave go. If the owner knocks out a tooth of a male or female slave, the slave shall be let go, a free person, to compensate for the tooth, which is really much preferable if you had to choose. Freedom for an eye, freedom for a tooth. Even in a time of indentured slavery, the slave owner did not have rights over the body of the slave. One writer puts it like this: he's not the property of his master. He belongs to himself. He's created in the image and loved by God. Created in the image of God and loved by God, and not a commodity. So maybe an attitude like they're millionaire football players, they should just shut up and play and keep their views to themselves, isn't really the most godlike or Christ-like attitude to take. Maybe we should sit down and talk about what's going on. Because people are not to be valued. People are not to be seen as commodities. We're not to see them as commodities. We're all created in God's image. This is how I started my talk that night on the Out of the Cold meeting. We're all created in God's image and loved by God. What does this mean? From the greatest to the least. What does love call for here? This is what I asked last week. I said this should also be one of the questions. Well, it's kind of the same question. What does love call for here? How then shall we live? Let this question be ever in front of us. Concern for the least is well spelled out in these chapters. You shall not wrong or oppress a resident alien. We heard this one too. For you were aliens in the land of Egypt. You shall not abuse any widow or orphan. If you do abuse them, then when they cry out to me, I will surely heed their cry. Because as we've seen from the story of Exodus, friends, this is what God does. He hears the cries of the oppressed. He hears the shrieks of the oppressed. This is what God does. If you lend money to my people, to the poor among you, you shall not deal with them as a creditor. You shall not exact interest from them. If you take your neighbor's cloak in pawn, you shall restore it before the sun goes down. For it may be your neighbor's only clothing to use as a cover. And what else shall that person sleep? And if your neighbor cries out to me, I will listen, for I am compassionate. Because this is what God is. And we'll be talking next week. Pastor Abby's going to be preaching about the glory of God. What does that mean? What is God like? And we're not just talking about dry laws. I mean, I read that law. We're not just talking about dry laws, because these laws, as we said last week, are worked out in our stories. They're worked out in stories. So what does this, what does this law about the cloak, how does that story go? How does the story go? Someone is newly arrived in an Israelite village, and they're new. They don't know anybody. Literally, they need seed money. Literally, they don't have any seeds. They want to grow some stuff so that they can live, but they don't have anything. And so this stranger is given a loan, and his cloak is demanded as collateral. And the creditor has a conversation with God that goes something like this. God says, you've taken that person's cloak. And the lender says, well, yeah, it's collateral. And God says, but he won't have anything to cover himself with tonight. And it's getting cold. And the creditor says, I know. That's why it's good collateral. And God says, he's going to be cold. He needs his cloak. And the creditor says, that's his problem. And God says, no, that's my problem. That's my problem. And it should be our problem too. They're addicts. It's not my problem. This is what we say. They have a cell phone. They must be doing okay. Right? No one helped us when we came to this country. Why should we help them? This is what we say. And maybe it wasn't right that no one helped us. Maybe someone should have helped us. And maybe we can help somebody. That's what we're talking about. Why can't they just get over it, we say? Why can't they just get over it? Like history is a book. And we can just simply turn the page on the book. There's a novelist called Paul Beatty. He has a novel called The Sellout. He says this in this novel. He says, history isn't the paper it's printed on. It's memory. And memory is time, emotion, and song. He says, history is the thing that stays with you. History isn't just a page on a book that we can turn. And maybe it's not so easy as, why don't they just get over it and move on? And this is the last thing I want to talk about. God's interest in restorative justice. God's interest in restorative justice. And there's three verses I just want to quickly go through here. When someone steals an ox or a sheep and slaughters it or sells it, the thief shall pay 5 oxen for an ox and 4 sheep for a sheep. Restorative justice. Look at this. We didn't look at 23, but I encourage you to read through the whole thing. When you come upon your enemy's ox or donkey going astray, you shall bring it back. Look after the donkey or the ox, even though it's your enemy's ox. Restorative justice, harmonious relationships. This is what God has created us for, friends. Again with the donkey. When you see the donkey of one who hates you lying under its burden and you would hold back from setting it free, you must help set it free. That's good, eh? You don't want to. You would hold back from setting it free, it says. I know. You don't want to. But you know what? Go do it. Go help the donkey. I like donkeys. I always like donkeys. 6 days you shall do your work, but on the 7th day you shall rest. This is one of the reasons, so that your ox and your donkey may have relief. Give them a rest. We're not supposed to be doing this 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. Stop. And it's not just for you, but it's for others, including the donkeys and the oxen. It's a great donkey picture, right? They look like they were smiling. This is what I love about the internet. 20 years ago, you couldn't have done that, right? Just find a picture of a donkey. What's the principle? What's the spirit of the code here? Why am I talking about the donkey so much? Because all of creation is part of this plan. We're talking about God being a delivering God, God being a redeeming God, God who brings everything back to himself and is bringing everything back to himself in Christ. And that includes the donkeys and the ox and everything. Because all creation is groaning, friends. It's not just us. All creation is groaning. So look after it. And I love that that's in there. And justice is to be restorative. Harmonious relationships. It's God's ultimate purpose. Harmonious relationships. This is how we framed it. Jesus framed it. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and your neighbor as yourself. That's what we're talking about. Harmonious relationships, the spirit of the code. I've been thinking about restorative justice and what this might look like for us. And I became aware of Gord Downie's work. Gord Downie, of course, just died recently. Lead singer of the Tragically Hip. And I'm ashamed to say I wasn't really aware of what he was doing in terms of restorative justice in the last few months of his life and his interest in the need for this. And we hear stats, we hear statistics about indigenous suicide, we hear stats about indigenous addiction rates and quality of life. And we say, is more money the answer? Is it simply a matter of more money or public policy? What is it that we need? And maybe we need something more. And if Gord Downie thought it was important, then maybe we should too. If you thought a lot of his work, and if you don't know his work, I invite you to become familiar with it because it's great. So what can we do? What can we do? We say. And we've been talking at Blythewood about getting together with this gentleman whose name is Jonathan Kakagamic, and he runs a high school in Toronto called the First Nations School of Toronto. And he's a residential school survivor. And we're talking about getting him to come and talk to us one Sunday afternoon after church, maybe January, maybe February. Because I think we can start by talking. And who knows where that might lead us. And who knows what God may call us to do in this. But it's important. And we're done. But we're never really done. And we've gone this morning from police and undercover police to goring ox to baseball to football to residential schools. But this is fitting and good, I think. Sorry. This is fitting and good. Because this is our life, friends. This is our life. No dress rehearsal. These are some of the things it means to make God the foundation of our lives, according to this code. And I said earlier that the covenant code gave flesh. It gave flesh to the Ten Commandments. Kind of fleshed them out. And of course, someone would be coming who would enflesh them. Right? We're going to be looking forward to his birth in about 3 weeks. Someone would be coming to enflesh them. Someone who was called the fulfillment of all the law. And all the prophets who put it like this, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself. And friends, he's the one in whom we find both the calling, and the invitation, and the enablement to live as God would have us live. And he's the one who brings life, and who brings blessing, and who brings love. And this is good news. And so I say, may we hold fast to him. Live for him, taking part in God's delivering and saving work wherever and however God calls us to do that, as he faithfully holds fast to us, and we do this together. May this be true of us all. Amen.